So the order of business for this, I apologize. Thank you guys for letting me have a sense of humor from time to time. The order of the week really has been hot washing or after action reporting on how things are going with testing at the airport. We had a follow-up testing meeting with the state of Alaska yesterday at noon. And we've also been hot washing or after action reporting on how things went with the communication and flow reporting out related to the first case here in Wrangell. And then we had a after action report with the state today, actually with Dr. Zink and a number of members of the staff from public health. So that was today at 3 o'clock. The work on the COVID condo continues. The shelter training with the Red Cross is taking place on the 12th. So we will have that shelter training in place, even though it is not required. Lucy Robinson, who is our recreation coordinator, has been brought on from her part-time status to full-time status, and she will be working, assisting Dorianne in that manner. I think I mentioned that previously. And we're working on the details associated with that, hammering out things like laundry and maintenance. If something were to go wrong, like with a toilet or, you know, leaky faucet or something inside the building that is something we cause or one of our clients cause while they're in there, food and all of the things like internet service and television and stuff for the people that would be there. So all of those little details, along with getting bedding personal essentials in place for folks is what's going on right now. So lots of busy work regarding that. I'm sure many of you are still paying attention to the governor and his mandates. And he had a press conference last night. And despite what you may have read in the Anchorage Daily News, there was a huge number of medical providers from across the state that asked the governor to put in a statewide mask mandate. He has decided that he is not going to do that. So he wants people to, you know, if people feel like they need to wear a mask to protect themselves, they should, and continue to let Alaskans decide what is best for themselves. And so no mask mandate there. And they on our call today, even though it was a hot wash for the first case, they did indicate, even though the trajectory of new cases in Alaska has changed significantly, they are anticipating no new mandates or changes associated with that. And the mayor may want to jump in here. He asked, is there a red line? What's the threshold where some changes might be made? And the answer to that is healthcare capacity. If we are filling up our ICU beds and our vent capacity, then that's going to give pause. That's the metric that is going to be watched for whether or not there are any pullbacks or changes on a statewide level or a regional level. I guess they didn't clarify. But Mr. Mayor, did you want to comment on that a little bit further?
No, just that today was a milestone day. We got over 200 active cases, and they that over 200 doesn't include out of state. They're not counting so if there's a outbreak at a plant, those aren't in that count. Those are all counted separately. So it's much higher than that. But where the previous number was counted with, we didn't have a lot of people from out of state on the previous numbers because we sort of weren't open then. But they've always talked about that they'll be driven by data, and so I just wondered what the data was. What can we anticipate? Because my biggest concern right now is that if the state does something else and they tell us on a Friday and expect it by the following Friday, it's difficult. And we're scrambling to try to keep up with what the state wants. And I'm encouraging them to give us a little bit of notice if they can, like give us some notice and give us some money to get done what you want us to do, and we'll make our best effort. But, and Dr. Zink, I think her hands are kind of tied. She just says, wash your hands, don't hang out in large groups. And that's the advice, and it's still the same mantra. So hopefully folks listen.
They really are encouraging us in our communities. One of the things we talked about in our after action report with the state today on our first case is that there seemed to be a disconnect in the state contacting businesses that might have been impacted and how that might work. And the message really was is that businesses and the public should consider that every person potentially has COVID. And so you should be cleaning your business, operating your business, maintaining your business, and you as an individual acting as if every person that you come into contact with has COVID. And so if each business and each individual acts that way appropriately, then there shouldn't be any, when there's a positive case, there shouldn't need to be any change in behavior. And fair enough. We did indicate that that's on the ground here in the real world, that is not necessarily the way things happen. And so it's hard to send the message to the community. Yep, keep your social circles small and do all that personal hygiene and wear a mask. But then when the governor gets up in his press briefing and says, we're not going to do a mask mandate, that sort of, it makes the message that we are just, when we are asking locally for people to do that, because that's what helps arrest the curve and keep everybody safe. If the governor says the complete opposite of that, it's very hard for us. Then we look like the EOC and the borough looks like we're alarmists and we're just trying to make people do what's not necessary. So I did say that to them, but that is the consistent message from Dr. Zink and from the folks from the Department of Health. It is wear a mask, wash your hands, small social bubble, act as if everybody that you come into contact with has COVID, and operate your business and operate your personal life as such, and everybody will be okay. And so that's the message we're gonna send. And hopefully the community is not doing that, because we're trying to do something different here in Wrangell. Jogging on from there, Jamie Roberts continues to work with C-Level on refining the final bits of their operating plan, and to make sure that we as the borough and the EOC are providing them with every bit of support we can to make sure that they've got a good operating plan for the summer, so that their workforce is stable, their employees are safe, our community's safe, and we can make sure that part of our economy remains strong. The Reopen Wrangell Task Force is, they may have already today issued a new newsletter. I reviewed it earlier today. Outstanding information, and so look for that online and in your email boxes if you haven't seen that already. My thanks to Kate Thomas for pulling that together, and Carol Rushmore for assisting on that. And there, one of the things that we're trying to work through in the EOC is figuring out a way to do sort of mobile testing, so that at flight times, we've got this testing service at the airport to test incoming folks, perhaps at another time or a couple of times a day down at the harbor. We've got testing available for fishermen that might be coming in from out of state, or yachters or boaters that are coming in from out of state. And so we're trying to figure out how to make that work. And so that continues to be something that we strive to provide so that we're getting testing in the most easily accessible places for people. The Reopen Wrangell Task Force and the EOC is working on pulling together some resources for what we are calling maybe some decision-making matrices or questions that businesses may want to ask. The Reopen Wrangell Task Force and the members of the EOC that are fielding questions that are coming in are getting questions from businesses about, should I open? Is it safe for me to open? And that really is a decision that has to be made by each individual business owner based on a whole wide range of different things. Can folks social distance? Do they have the ability to clean things appropriately? Is anybody in their household or, you know, in their business an at-risk individual? In any of those things. And so what we're trying to pull together is a list of questions that folks or businesses can sort of go through and help answer questions for themselves to make a decision as to whether or not they can open or reopen or the degree to which they can open.
Lisa, yeah. Mr. Mayor, if I could. Good.
I'm sorry, Kim, go ahead.
Go ahead.
So right before this meeting, I actually jumped on a Zoom meeting with Captain Spray, Jamie Roberts, Aaron Michaels, and Elizabeth Manning, the information officer with DHSS. And along those same lines, they're trying to put together possibly a website that businesses can refer to. So instead of us coming up with something or a list of questions, basically a website that says this is what you should be doing, and if they're doing what they should be doing, then they should be okay. And they did reiterate that you know, if there is a positive case, that they're not reaching out to that business because they're not considered a close contact, and they're only reaching out to the close contacts. So again, that if a business is doing what they're supposed to be doing with the distancing of the tables and the cleaning procedures and such, then they should be okay. But once that website is put together or the documentation or pamphlets are put together, I'm sure Dee Dee and Jamie and myself will be able to get that to the Chamber of Commerce or the Reopen Wrangell Task Force so they can get that out to the businesses.
Kim, I'm a little bit confused. When businesses started up before non-essential, they had to submit a mitigation plan for review. But when the governor opened things kind of wide open, my understanding was we were open for business. Those mitigation plans were no longer required. And they no longer were required to follow them. Is that not the case? Are all businesses still supposed to have a mitigation plan? Do restaurants still have to have? I know that I think it's at 75% capacity. But my question really comes down to: is there mitigation plans for all businesses? I thought he opened things up.
Kim, do you want me to try to?
You can go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, as I understand it, there are guidelines that come from CDC standards that were associated with each of those initial reopen mandates that came out for the different businesses. And so if people, as the reopening happens, if you are following those CDC mandates for your specific type of business, then you should be good to go. My understanding is that unless you are critical workforce infrastructure that is still required to have a plan, that just for general business in the community, no plan is necessary, but that best practices is that you're following those CDC guidelines for operating.
Right. I guess what I just wanted to be clear on is that there's no mandate that I know there's mandates in the fisheries. I know there's some in restaurants, I think there's some capacity mandates, but all the other businesses, your florist shop or your your hardware, well, a hardware store was a critical infrastructure, but a sporting goods store. They can open up and they don't have to submit a plan and be following a plan. Even though there's best practices, there's no mandate saying you have to do it a certain way. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, Mr. Mayor. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I guess I'm just a little bit worried. I didn't want people to start thinking that there was mandates that said you had to do a certain thing a certain way with a business because, and I'm not even sure about restaurants anymore if they have like capacity mandates. I noticed I was in the Stikeen Inn and he had tables, like a blank table and then a table and then a blank table. So I don't know if that's him just doing that or if that's a mandate, but, and I guess that's where it's probably confusing for businesses because if it's not mandated, they may not understand. So I think it's great. We're trying to help people understand what best practices are and what's suggested.
Right. And really all of that, I want to clarify, we're not making any of these things up. These are, we're taking stuff directly from the CDC guidelines and trying to provide that information. This isn't us adding an extra or suggesting anything alternative besides those guidelines. Mr. Mayor, I don't... I don't believe I have anything else.
The only thing that I'll mention is we're attempting to get a virtual town hall together for next Thursday. We wanted to try a town hall and we've invited Dr. Zink. We invited her today and some other Department of Health officials. And then we're going to have our A team there. So our folks from Fire Hall and the folks that are reviewing plans and working with all the mandates and the fisheries, the harbor master, police chief, fire chief, and Lisa, and get the A team up there and let folks send in some questions and listen in and hopefully be able to have a really constructive town hall and hear where folks are at and get questions answered. So I'm excited about that. We're hoping for next Thursday night, but details will be coming.
Other than that, Mr. Mayor, unless anybody's got any questions, I think that's all I have.
I do have a question. Mr. Mayor, who is organizing that? Is that Captain Spray?
I sent out an email to everybody today just saying that I got it going. It was brought up in that meeting, so I got it going, but I sent it to you too.
Okay.
Yeah, you should be in your inbox there.
Okay.
Assembly Member Decker?
Yeah, I was curious. I don't know if I missed it somewhere along the lines, but is there new information about follow-up testing on the one positive case, like confirmation testing, anything like that?
We have not been provided with any information about follow-up testing. We did, as part of the release today, that went out at, it was a little bit late at 4 o'clock or so, Kim had the testimony of Dr. Parker from Tuesday night transcribed that goes over all of the testing and talks about how once there's a positive, it's considered a positive, you know, all of those things. And so we hope that would, it's a lot. It's like three pages, but we hope that we'll try to answer folks' questions regarding testing. But we, as members of the EOC, have not been provided with any additional information about follow-up testing on the positive individual.
And Julie, they can't provide anything to us. They've been very clear about that. They, you know, all through, nobody's name has ever been said to us. And all we were told is there's one case in the community that has come up positive and then they take over from there. So there's no follow-up at all with us on that.
So I realize, I know that there's, you know, protected health information and so we only get so certain information released to the public, but they don't go back and explain to the public if the person is retested and what that is?
They do. That's our understanding that they do not.
I asked specifically about that with Dr. Parker if there was any, like, you know, I mistakenly thought they did. I mean, that was, I thought that I had heard that. I thought that was how it worked, that if it was, it didn't, you know, but it is not, because they, like Dr. Parker said, if it triggered off the test, the send out test, then they assume that it is that person at some point has had a positive exposure, and that they're at the tail end of the process. And so they don't assume that there's ever a false positive. And you know, right or wrong, it's not our call. We're just not provided. No community is provided with it, and they don't send out any of the information regarding the other tests. Now, an individual might, like somebody, you know, who tested, and they may share out what their information, you know, like what their tests were. But that's never going to come from the state, and it's never going to come from us, because we just don't know.
With the number of, one of the things that I wanted to try to release in the press information was how many close contacts had been identified and contacted. I was not even permitted to provide that information, was not given that information. So that those are the sorts of things that they just don't get reported out.
Okay. I wonder if, could I make a couple of comments?
Please, Julie.
So I just wanted to say the Economic Development Committee met again yesterday, and we have a meeting on Monday, and we're hoping to be able to bring to the Assembly potentially a next set of recommendations. We're still I'm not sure how quickly we'll be able to solidify that. So, but just to let you know, another thing to be clear with folks that may be listening in the audience, and because it does get confusing with, you know, reopening and things like that and all the revisions to mandates, but Health Mandate 10, Appendix 1, is relative to seafood processing workers, and that still stands. And the Health Mandate 17 is for fishermen, and that still stands. So there are still strong mandates related to the seafood industry that don't change, that have not changed from the other revised mandates. And then another thing is, I was in a seafood industry call this week that the state said that they're now recommending, I believe is the word they use. It was a little bit squishy, but recommending, and I think it was based on CDC information that's coming out specifically about seafood processing. CDC recommendations, they're not final yet, but they're in the process of finishing them. That, you know, continued testing happen every 3 weeks for workers. So that was a bit of new information for me. That's it.
Just again to remind everyone, we secured enough tests, we believe, for up to, 6 tests per person at the plant. That was kind of what we did. But with that information, you know, hope if we need to revisit that. And I know we're still looking at other funding sources for that, Julie. We're looking at, you know, we have the CARES Act money to fall back on, but there is specific industry monies that we're trying to target and get after for those specific industries, because it's designated for them and it should be used for them. So one thing, sorry, Julie, do you have anything else there?
Well, you said industry monies. So I was curious what you were talking about.
So for example, we received a new machine and testing supplies that's specific for fisheries. That was sent to us to deal for fishermen. Now, we can use it for other things, but predominantly it's to be used as a rapid test, another rapid test for the fisheries. And so that came to the hospital. And then we know that we've heard that there's some additional funds specific to helping us get the phishing testing set up. So we're trying to access those, but everything is kind of convoluted and try to figure it out. So I keep coming back to, we have the CARES Act money. I don't want us to wait to figure this stuff out. We need to use that CARES Act money to get testing, you know, whether it's testing at the airport up and running. You know, this community, my understanding is Petersburg really is still wrestling with trying to get that all set up and rolling. And we were able to get her done on the first flight and be able to have that happen because search really pulled through. But we want to set it up so we can have the testing probably where the testing will be done at the airport, and the van then will go down to the harbor and hit the fishermen, and then go over to the plant, hit the plant, and then maybe we're hoping to be able to do some community members. So it kind of, it's like a blood bank van, you know, that just roves around, and they hit everybody that needs their testing done at the various intervals moving along. So that's the plan. And because we have that money, we're able to kind of scheme those things out and make sure we're covering off those bases. But yeah, I think that what we're seeing in the industry, that the more testing that we do and the sooner we catch things, and I've emphasized this with Rocky a million times, we want to catch the person who may be positive as soon as we can to isolate them away from everybody else so we don't have it spread through the plant or the fleet or the whatever it is. We want to, or the community, we want to be able to isolate them and then keep the season rolling is the goal.
Yeah, I think they're actually learning quite a bit from the testing on the industry because they're, you know, the testing in combination with the quarantine, the 14 days, you know, they're finding people on day 14, even though they've been in quarantine and they tested negative, you know, initially. So what those percentages are, I think it'll be interesting to look back on later in the year. The question about funding, I think, is something for us to consider to think about, too. The industry is really struggling with it, and they've had the same question to the state, like, okay, you know, you wanted us to do the quarantine testing. Now you want to do testing, you know, every 3 weeks. There's supposed to be money available for testing, yet we're still being charged for testing. We don't want to sound like a broken record, but what's the deal? And literally the answer was, broken record? I haven't heard this question before.
Yeah. I know it.
Mr. Mayor and Assemblymember Decker, in our questions, this testing issue came up when we had our initial pre-airport deployment with a conference with the state, and their response was, "We really have the industry is tasked with being responsible for themselves. So our industry partners are responsible for paying for their testing and taking care of all of that." That came directly out of the mouth of public health, that industry is supposed to be taking care of and paying for all of that. The municipalities that, you know, the state shouldn't be having to pay for that.
And ironically, Julie, and Patty, I see your hand up and we'll jump to you next, but ironically, the state is whining about the cost of testing at the airports and they don't think they can sustain it. So this is...
Well, and we're, you know, everybody's getting mixed messages because the industry is told, well, the testing should be free. We're providing those tests for free. And we're like, well, that's only one part of the cost, you know, and so it's not free. So
search is not going, hey, we really want to do that testing, don't take it away from us. They're not saying that at all. They're saying, hey, if you can find out another way to do this, we'd love if you did that. So because I don't, you know, they have to hire staff and it really adds up. Assemblymember Gilbert, sorry about that. You've been waiting patiently.
Oh no, that's okay, because that was my question. And it concerns testing of community members. Did I hear you say that at some point in time there may be free testing for community members? In other words, free administration and free lab fees?
I am advocating for that with the EOC. And I believe that if we're willing to help industry, we need to be willing to help our own community. And I gladly advocate it for the plant to do it right. I mean, that just made the most sense. If that was a stumbling block, we helped them out. But the community, I'm getting lots of requests from community members and local business owners that would like to test their employees. One of the issues with testing is that it's a snapshot in time. And I know that like Search tests their employees every 2 weeks. So it's kind of an ongoing thing. And I don't know if we have the funds or the tests to test at that sort of level, but I think we should look at it and see how we go. If tests start to become scarce, then we'll have to kind of rein it in and go, okay, critical infrastructure or whatever it might be, however we look at that to make it work. But yes, I'm advocating very strongly for that. And I know Lisa has some great ideas on how to get it going. And we've got a meeting. I think the folks are meeting here fairly quickly about the possibilities of getting that set up. Lisa, do you want to talk about that too?
Let's wait till after the meeting, Mr. Mayor. I'm not quite ready to talk through that yet.
Perfect. Anyone else? All right. Well, there we go. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Julie.
Sorry, I'm a little slow. I got kicked off the internet for a minute. I have a question. It's probably for Lisa. Regarding our $3.85 million that's tagged for coming to Wrangell, is there sort of a running tally so far of how much has been set aside or tagged or committed or used?
Yeah, yes, there is. And I'm sorry, I keep saying this. We are going to get a report out to you. So excluding staff, we are at $678,000 right now. That includes the $400,000 set aside for the request from the Economic Development Committee and the money for the ambulance and the odds and ends of things like the porta potties and the, et cetera, we've ordered. That doesn't include staff time. So that's the accounting we're trying to get a handle on right now, because part of the issue was, like, for me, we had been told originally under FEMA that only overtime would be covered for employees. So if you were already on staff, any of your regular time that was spent doing COVID related stuff didn't count. Only your overtime, or like somebody like Jamie Roberts, who we brought on specifically to do COVID related stuff, that would be covered. Under CARES, any existing staff person whose time and function has been reallocated to COVID related stuff, those percentages are reimbursable. And so we are now tracking all of that, but everything from March, April, and even a little bit of early May was not tracked. So people are having to go back, like myself, and recreate stuff from the calendar as to the time that was spent. So getting an accounting of that is proving to be a little bit difficult. But now, for the last couple of months, there's been stuff in the payroll system. So you go in and you actually hit COVID time, regular COVID time, overtime, whatever it is, and that goes into the system. So it's going into an account. So we just need to get you. The other thing we're having to do is, of course, under CARES Act, 100% of public safety. So we just need to allocate those portions of our officers' time and public safety time, EMS time, to make sure that 100% of those are being allocated. And we'll get that to you very quickly.
Okay, any other questions? All right, looks like none. Thank you very much, Lisa, for the update. Everybody have a great night.
Thank you.